Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby. This is a podcast about the intersections of presidential politics and professional wrestling. Co-host and co-author Chris Kelly and I are sort of experts on this. We actually wrote a book about it called The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Professional Wrestling. We've also written for places like The Washington Post and Vice, U.S. News and World Reports, Roll Call, and many other politically tinged publications. You can find all of that at presidentwrestler.com. This episode was originally recorded in the late night slash early evenings of July 21st and 22nd of 2016. I was calling in from the Republican National Convention. That day I spoke with then-delegate Linda McMahon, current Small Business Administrator head Linda McMahon, also former WWE CEO Linda McMahon. I also spoke with Ted Cruz campaign manager Jeff Rowe and WWE superstar Dolph Ziggler. So I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure that this is the only podcast ever to feature Ted Cruz's former campaign manager, a current WWE superstar, and the former head of the WWE. For more current episodes, follow us on Facebook. We're at Facebook.com/GabPod, G-A-B-P-O-D. Get it, Great American Bash Podcast. Okay, so without further ado, here's definitely one of the most interesting episodes we've ever recorded. Here's the Great American Bash, Episode 3.
You smell what Barack has cooked.
I'm here to challenge you to a match.
When it comes to standing up for the American people, I am ready to rumble.
I think that we may need a wrestler in the White House.
Welcome to the Great American Bash. My name is Chris Kelly, recording from Washington, D.C.
I am Brandon Weatherby, and I am currently in Section 158 of Progressive Field at 11:44 p.m. the night Donald Trump accepted the Republican nomination for president. I was here. That was weird. We're going to do a podcast about it, and I have no idea what we're going to talk about because my head's everywhere.
Yeah, I can imagine. Let's start off just real quick with what just happened. You survived a speech that was like an hour and a half long.
Was it really that long?
I mean, I guess Ivanka did about a half hour maybe, so maybe it was only an hour and change.
You know what? You're right. You're about right, because it's 11:44 now. I left the convention center at 11:38. I think he was actually done by like 11:34, but it took a while to get the balloons. It didn't go smoothly, but it wasn't a train wreck either. It just didn't go well. I had a floor pass, and they're in increments, and she was done between 10:15 and 10:20. So, yeah, he went over an hour, I'd say about 80 minutes. That's a pretty long speech.
Yeah, and I think, it's all blurring together, but he kind of went to just screaming, emphasizing every word in it pretty quickly. So it was just, I can imagine what it was like over the PA in there.
Well, I tried
How
to
was
get
the reaction?
Any, not great, but not horrible either. He definitely picked up speed at the end, or steam at the end, where it counted. And he didn't go lowest common denominator at the end. I don't know if you guys noticed that. When he said Hillary Clinton has a saying, and it's I'm with her, and I have a saying too, and some people in the audience started chanting, lock her up. And his response was actually, I'm with you, the people of America. So he didn't punch. You know, he actually, for the first time in a long time, had a very hopeful message, which was really nice to hear. And Ivanka's speech was probably the most well-received of the night, definitely on the more positive side. We're both on the liberal media side of Twitter, so everyone was saying, like, where's that guy, or everything she's saying is great except it's Donald Trump, so it's not true, things like that. But in the room, she was definitely the most beloved speaker of the evening.
Yeah, and I will say, as far as, I mean, you said positive, at least with the close, a lot of it, you know, the word that the media that I'm seeing already is a very dark speech. The one part that was kind of interesting that caught my ear was when he had mentioned that we're going to protect our LGBTQ people, which there's plenty of jokes about that on the internet already, that he read it like an eye chart, that he's going to protect them from, you know, crazy foreigners.
Yes.
And it kind of came off like he said that they booed at, like, we're going to protect them, and then they cheered at crazy foreigners. And then he actually said something to the effect of, like, you know, it's really nice to hear that reaction, the cheering, that is,
because,
you know, when I'm speaking to Republicans.
Absolutely.
And
right.
And he said, like, thank you.
100%. I was actually outside for that part because I wanted to see how it was where the protesters were and where the rest of the media is on that one block. And it was really quiet. There was no there was one, literally one protester with a a megaphone. And he was making everyone upset regardless of how you were going to vote because everyone just wanted to hear the speech. So after about 20 minutes out there trying just to gauge reaction. By the way, make white people with dreadlocks illegal. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. We should be able to agree on that. Anyways, it was not capturing anyone's imagination. It wasn't boring either. It was just like, I kind of feel like I've heard this before. And I went back into the arena out of boredom, actually. And I got a seat in the section where you could see the teleprompter sort of behind the stage. So I wanted to see how often he went off script. He didn't really go off script ever. He just added one line to almost every paragraph. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I was noticing that. He was ad-libbing out there a bit. And there, you know. And he also paused. There was a lot of USA chants. And a couple times he also joined in the USA chant, which was a little weird. But
yeah,
not
that's weird.
Not unexpected, but it's just strange. Yeah, I mean, the reaction online is generally, and from the side that we're seeing with our, you know, biases is just, you know, oh, God, it's crazy. But I feel like looking at the speech, I agree with you, there wasn't anything. I scanned the remarks as prepared before it, and, you know, it's a Trump, some speech, but with less ad-libbing, less kind of riffing and stuff, because he doesn't usually have a prepared speech. So this is a little different for him. It's kind of interesting. It's just like it's almost a down note because there was so much other crazy stuff that happened that we should probably get into because we're catching up on the last 36 hours.
About,
36
yeah.
hours of the convention. You know, the couple of quick hits and then the big one, the big storyline, I think, from the last 36. But, you know, just some crazy stuff that's going to get lost in the in the churn, I feel. Like, I mean, I already feel like the Melania thing is, like, that's gone. That's done. Right?
Melania's done. That no one cares anymore. Except Trump bringing it back up tonight, which was great. Did you notice the line? Melania and Ivanka, they did a job.
they did the job.
Why didn't you say a good job?
No, but the job, you know, they're jobbers.
Did the job. Melania is the jobber of the campaign. Oh boy.
But before that, in previous days, things that'll also be lost to the churn. That time that Laura Ingraham did a Nazi salute and kind of caught herself mid aisle. That was interesting.
She JBL'd it up there.
She JBL'd it. That would be John Bradfield, Bradshaw Layfield. I always portmanteau his name. Who got some cheap heat in Germany by goose-stepping and hiling around, which is illegal in Germany.
Yeah.
We also have, he had the Ben Carson speech where he tried to play the degrees of Kevin Bacon with Hillary Clinton and Lucifer.
So that was our first Demon Kane reference of the election season.
Yeah. I prefer Corporate Kane, I think. But Demon Kane did show up and chokeslam two people that wrestling fans like on Tuesday. So Stephen Kane's back. Also, Trump did say something during the speech about death and destruction and stuff, and I was like, that's a little Undertaker and Kane for me, the death and destruction.
Oh, for sure.
Stuff. Like,
for sure.
Yeah.
Let me just really quick. I was in the room for these two things. We were texting back and forth during the Undertaker entrance, and then tonight was American Badass entrance. And, like, I think there's a consensus with all wrestling fans. We acknowledge the American Badass Undertaker period, but we don't want to revisit it. I'm really disappointed in Trump's entrance tonight.
Yeah, I think, he must have been watching the news coverage of that and didn't like the GIFs or something and decided to roll it back tonight. Also, in the last couple of days, Mike Pence spoke. That's pretty much all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
Peter Thiel spoke tonight from what I caught, what they had on PBS, because that's what I can get over the air. Nothing much in there except he made comments about trans bathrooms and how it's a distraction. I only wanted to bring him up because that's the founder of PayPal and Palantir and the first investor in Facebook and the inspiration for Peter Gregory on Silicon Valley, who bankrolls Hulk Hogan's case against Gawker. Do you know why?
Because they outed him.
Yeah, and they've you know, they've made fun of Silicon Valley people.
I understand that, and we are technically the media. We are the media, actually. I'm like, this is the media. But I side with that guy because at the end of the day, Gawker was being a dick. He was not a public figure. That's the difference.
Yes and no. When there's at a certain point, like you're a business person, you're a public figure.
Yes, but what was his business at all related to his sexual preferences? Was it related at all to his identity, his gender identity? Who cares?
No, and that's Gawker stuff. I think there's a scary precedent where a guy who's worth $2.8 billion decides which media gets to exist. But
how is it different than anything ever? That's just how the media works. Newspapers?
No, they don't usually get. They usually don't get sued by Hulk Hogan out of existence. It's just a really strange way for that to happen.
So I was.
But we're in the new era.
That's the only speech I really wanted to see tonight because that's the closest to wrestling other than the Future First Family. So I was like, okay, where should I sit? And I was like, Connecticut. I want to see if Linda McMahon is here. Ladies and gentlemen, I talked to Linda McMahon tonight, former president of the WWE. I joined the Kiss Your Ass Club and said very, very glowing things about her. And I asked her if I could record something for a radio, and she said yes. And so here's some of that.
Were you worried about being here considering the company you have is kind of bipartisan?
Oh, absolutely not. We are a strong supporter of Donald Trump, and Vince and I both are strong supporters of Donald. And from a company perspective, you're right. WWE is bipartisan.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so no, but we're supporting Donald.
Do you have any similarities that you see between the future president and your husband?
They are both brilliant.
That is proof that I talked to the mother of wrestling at the Republican National Convention. By the way, during Peter's speech, Chris Christie walked by me, host of WrestleMania NY/NJ. So, yeah, there's no, like, 6 degrees of separation. Here are four people.
Just one.
Three, just one people. Come on.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But, yeah, you definitely, with throwing in the future president line, to Linda McMahon was pretty nice.
You gotta know your role. One real quick second. Did you hear how Ivanka introduced Trump?
No.
The people's candidate, the people's president.
Oh, that's amazing. The people's champion. Oh, I'm so excited.
Oh, so great. The Rock's gonna be pissed.
It's great. Yeah. Speaking of people who didn't know their role in the last 36 hours. Ted Cruz given the big speech before Mike Pence last night, Wednesday night.
Okay,
and,
I was in the room for that. In the room for that. Let me talk through that. Number one, best transition of your entire life. Great job. Number two, I was on the floor for Cruz when he came out, and I tweeted out after maybe 3 minutes into his speech, this is the most successful speaker of the Republican National Convention thus far. He had everyone's attention. He didn't kowtow. I mean, he had one line where he gave it up for Cleveland and LeBron and all that, but that's not that bad. He didn't have any one-syllable, three-word chants. There was none of that. He actually said a really, like, heartfelt story about a death. And then I got a phone call, and I was talking to this person on the phone. I was like, wow, this guy's owning the room. I hung up the phone call, and all of a sudden, the opposite happened. He had the fastest heel turn at the Republican National Convention, most loved to most hated. This was Seth Rollins' return in 2016. Holy shit. Everyone hated him. I was 100% wrong with my prediction, and I quickly tweeted out about it.
Yeah, no, that's what happens when, you know, you have 9 minutes planned speech. It goes 23 minutes long, and at the 20-minute mark, he says, vote your conscience, and it becomes clear that to the audience, it was clear, and I'm going to get to some of this behind-the-scenes stuff here and the aftermath here, that an actual endorsement of Trump was not coming. The New York delegation, real close, starts chanting endorse Trump, and he acknowledges them, but it totally loses control of the room. Like you said, after a pretty great, I mean, he had them for 19 and a half minutes. And then when it was clear that he was coming for a landing, they really turned.
Did you think, did you watch it live or no?
No.
Okay. In the room, I was like, oh, he's giving the first stump speech of 2020. Like, he's doing great. it was not at all expected.
Yeah, no, and I think it still, I think once the smoke clears, it will still be the first stump speech of 2020. It'll be seen probably more favorably.
Yeah, here's the thing. I don't necessarily agree with that it's going to be seen more favorably. I spoke to his actual campaign director today, and I kind of followed up with a internet theory that you sent me. Could you explain the internet theory that you read and sent me, and I kind of agree with, but it's too conspiracy theory to be true?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it's too conspiracy theory. It's just, if we're taking it the logic we're using, there was a post on Balloon Juice, pretty great liberal blog, and I was quoting here, but it's basically the answer is that it all happened just like Trump wanted. Wrestling Trump terms, Trump lured Cruz on stage and surprised him with a heel turn. Sincerely believe that Trump set up Cruz for a face heel rivalry, well, Trump gets to play the betrayed good guy. Basically, that they rope-a-doped him to kind of mix my wrestling and boxing metaphors. They rope-a-doped him. They had the speech. Trump had tweeted that he had seen it 2 hours before. There's some controversy of how early people saw it and saw it, but they knew earlier in the day that no endorsement was going to be in there. So they gave him enough rope to hang himself, and he did it. To make him look bad and make Trump look good in relief, and to say, hey, they're booing this guy, that was my main rival, so that shows that everybody wants me. So I don't actually think it's that. I think everybody got what they wanted, though, because, like, Cruz can be the heel for that moment and the stuff that happened after the speech, but 4 years, I mean, you know, 4 years is a long time. He's not going to be the heel for Republicans forever. He got to make his first stump speech of 2020, and Trump gets to vanquish his last opponent, or second to last in his mind.
Sure. I understand that logic, but I don't agree that Cruz can't play the heel for the duration of his career in the squared circle, because no one likes him. No one likes him in Washington, D.C., so it's not like he's pleasing a bunch of people back home. No, he's just hated across the board now. And now his own state is saying they'll never vote for him. I mean, these are the people that traveled from Texas to Ohio to support whoever they thought was going to be the nominee. They were really hoping it was their guy, and he just pissed them off.
Yeah, and it's pretty crazy. He explained it as saying he's not in the habit of supporting people who attacked his wife and his father, which is fair enough.
Very fair. But here's another thing. Don't show up.
Yeah, no, he wanted it both ways. But this is his whole career is that he has been, this is why he doesn't have, this is why he didn't have any endorsements from his colleagues. Because this is how he runs things. I mean,
is Ted Cruz the ultimate warrior of the GOP?
I can go with that one, I think.
Yeah,
they push
no one really
as
likes
the
him.
Next, they're pushing him as the next guy, but he's probably not ready for prime time. No one likes him, and he kind of shoots on his own.
He always goes into business for himself.
Definitely.
So, yeah, anyways, I was at an event today. It was a panel, and I spoke with his campaign manager, and I floated the idea of, was this an intentional heel turn? Do you think that Trump had this all set up? And, of course, I was just blatantly laughed at. And I understand that. And then this is what he said.
Did the Cruz campaign study any tape of Donald Trump as a wrestling figure?
The heel. He's the heel.
Exactly.
He's the argument. No, I know it.
So did you study that? Because that's a real smart heel move, what he did last night,
right.
If that was intentional.
What's the heel move?
Move is he's setting up Ted Cruz to be the bad guy, and now he's got a hero turn. He's got a face turn. So now he's the good guy tonight.
Yeah. Maybe Vince McMahon wrote the whole thing, right?
And I would like to point out that, yes, everyone laughed about that, but the WWE Hall of Famer is the one accepting the nomination. So maybe you all are dummies and you should watch some wrestling programming.
Yeah, the stuff that happened after that was pretty much like backstage promo / brawl type stuff. Cruz was turned away at Sheldon Edelson's suite, and they when asked why, a former senator, unnamed, said, because he's a piece of shit. Cuccinelli said that he had to pull Cruz's wife. People were closing in on her, and people in his delegation started approaching her and yelling at her. Someone pointed at her and said, Goldman Sachs. And they had to get a police escort out of the building, which is the reverse Goldberg, to contrast the entrances we had the other night.
It's so great.
Yeah, it was pretty one of a kind. We're looking at the other stuff that's happening, you know, the kind of response to this in the media. Stephen Colbert had Mark Cuban on to do a segment, basically. I don't watch Colbert, so is that a recurring bit where they just do, like,
taking the gloves off? I think that was more of a reference to the old Colbert Report, but I watched the show occasionally, and I haven't seen it. Oh, no, I was a huge Colbert. I think I saw. Anyways, So Cuban essentially does one-liners, and then Colbert adds a tag. And right. We're going to play the best part of a skit that meant well and kind of did okay.
Donald, I've got a travel tip for you. When you're going through customs and they ask if you've got anything to declare, try not to blurt out bankruptcy.
Oh, that's a billionaire bitch slap.
So now we have yet another reference to the Battle of the Billionaires at WrestleMania 23.
Yeah, because billionaire bitch slap is not a phrase that means anything outside of that context.
That's not a thing. That's not a thing. I would like to say hello to late show writer Daniel Kibblesmith. He's also the account owner of GOP Teens. If you're not following GOP Teens, you should. It's great, and it makes me smile all the time.
Yeah, and to fill that in for everyone who didn't listen to all of our WrestleMania podcast, the billionaire bitch slap was what Vince McMahon threatened Trump with in the run-up to their match by proxy at WrestleMania 23. And it turned out that Trump actually was the one that gave him the slap at the press conference before Mania. It was some of their very limited physical contact. You know, and just to keep the connections going, Mark Cuban was one of the guest hosts of Monday Night Raw during that period of the show's history, and he was put through a table by Sheamus.
I don't think Sheamus was ready for that. Off balance, Mark Cuban just shoves Sheamus to the mat. Mark Cuban signed on to be the guest host here tonight. He certainly didn't sign on for this. No, wait a minute. Don't do it, Sheamus. Don't do it, Sheamus!
You know, he looks actually pretty good. He's like 6'3", Sheamus about 6'4". You know, he looks head-to-head, but no, he went through the table after he got a little bit of offense in. This is when they were building up Sheamus, was like 2009. So as we get back into the wrestling part of this portion of the explicitly wrestling part of this podcast, let's kind of start backwards. Something happened last night that I thought was interesting, and this is something to watch. There's a 20-year-old wrestler on the NXT roster. He's a D.C. resident, Patrick Clark. He was on Tough Enough this season. And he basically was just getting squashed. But he came out he's a 20-year-old African-American guy, comes out with tights that are airbrushed with the American flag, a bald eagle, and his face, recalling Rick Rude, but also, you know, patriotic Sting, Hogan, whoever. On house shows, he's actually been doing this gimmick where he's a Trump supporter, and he says really, you know, Trump-esque things. The other day at a house show, he wrestled in a Trump hairpiece. So I'm curious to see if they're able to, you know, he's not in any of the other tapings, but I'm curious, you know, after SummerSlam, after the next thing, if they're going to need more stories and more bodies, I'm curious if they bring that into a continuity.
Yeah, I'm going to guess really quick. I'm going to guess no. I mean, that's one of the things Linda McMahon told me tonight. That's not like, ooh, it's exclusive. No, it just makes sense. And I talked to Dolph Ziggler last night, too. It's the exact same thing. WWE is a bipartisan company. Wrestlers have their own points of views, but they're encouraged not to really share them or to campaign for anybody. You could vote however you want. And if you've ever seen John Cena in the Today Show, it's very clear that he is not a Donald Trump supporter. So they're not finding the biggest guys in the company. So I don't think they're going to play with this gimmick. That being said, Darren Young's gimmick, which we need to bring up as long as it's going, make Darren Young great again with Coach Bob Backlund. There's yet another news story about Bob Backlund that we just read about.
Yeah, so basically the draft thing, and now I got to go watch this whole freaking 3-hour thing to see what else is in there. But during the entirety of SmackDown and then the hour after SmackDown, they were running on the network doing like a draft day special. And apparently that's the thing that actually looked like draft coverage in one of your major real sports.
Yeah, it looked like sports.
Where they were doing backstage interviews. They've got their talking heads and all that stuff. So in the backstage interview, so this is the story with this is that Darren Young, they give him a new gimmick where he wants to make Darren Young great again. He brings in Bob Backlund, who's a 70-year-old WWE Hall of Famer, champion in the 70s and 80s. Pretty beloved. His gimmick is that he's kind of a crazy old man. He's only 66, actually.
He looks like he's 78.
Yeah, he definitely has lived a life. But, you know, his gimmick is always that he's a little unhinged. and she's giving all this kind of crazy advice. I've been wondering this whole time if the payoff to the gimmick will be that Bob Backlund finds out that Darren Young is gay, because Darren Young is gay in real life.
And black.
I'm hoping they don't. And black, yeah. And this is what happened last night.
You got to have a constant tendency to relapse into barbarianism to be successful on Raw.
And the quote's just weird and kind of fits his gimmick, but apparently Backlund is a history buff. And that quote, if you're not familiar with it, I wasn't, but it comes from President Andrew Johnson, and it was about the nations of Negroes have shown less capacity for government. Wherever they have been left to their own devices, they have shown a constant tendency to relapse into barbarianism. So that's, who's vetting this stuff? I guess nobody, because it's the giraffe thing shown on the network, and literally nobody's going to get that reference. But they are definitely walking a fine line if they're letting Bob Backlund go out there and refer to racist presidents.
I'm going to go with that was a Backlund original. A writer.
Oh, yeah,
not
no,
have.
And I think nothing will happen because of it. I just think this is the kind of crazy shit when you have 66-year-old carnies kind of just shooting from the hip.
Sort of like what I would just watch tonight.
Yeah, another shoot with some of the backstage stuff is kind of interesting, which we kind of, I think, differ on whether or not it's a work shoot or a real shoot. Cesaro, a superstar, making comments about what he thinks about his position in the draft and what he thinks about, Stephanie McMahon and Mick Foley coexisting on the show. Get a little clip of that interview.
That's part of the problem that you just asked me that question, because I don't really care. I think Raw going forward needs to be about the superstars. It needs to be about the performers in the ring and not about how Stephanie McMahon and Mick Foley coexist. They need to be there to mediate and make the best show. But that does not need to be the focus.
So basically, I think it's a work shoot. It was on the network. He has a little more to lose than Bob Backlund to go out there and basically say, I don't give a shit about the boss. But
yeah,
I think
it's a shoot. By the way, shoot means real thing, and work is something fake, like when Jake the Snake is like, I'm going to stick my snake on you. And then a work shoot is something that crosses over and you're not really sure. The most famous example, I would say, is CM Punk's pipe bomb.
Yes.
Okay, so I think this was a shoot. I think this is a man that's extremely frustrated with his job and feels like he hasn't been given the appropriate opportunity.
Yeah. No, there's definitely something there. And, this stuff, the thing with when you do a shoot like this, whether it's worked or not, you're trying to get some attention. You're trying to get, and you're calling out something that is wrong. So we'll see how it affects. I mean, if he goes out there and jobs for the next 4 weeks, maybe we'll find out it was a real thing. But that's one of those interesting ones to watch. A couple other little draft, leftovers. Did we talk about Heath Slater?
No, we did not talk about Heath Slater.
Okay, so Heath Slater, a longtime jobber, but a pretty entertaining one, was not drafted, basically so they could shoot video of the lights going out and him being left and chasing after, trying to find Stephanie and Shane after the draft. So strange thing, and this kind of gets back to what we were talking about, I think, 2 weeks ago, when we were talking about them, the WWE, the getting into real sports-type stuff and real coverage like that. So on WWE.com, they had an article like, what's Heath Slater going to do next? He didn't get drafted. This is a real draft. And they actually mentioned, he might go to Evolve, which is an indie promotion, or he might go to some UK indies. Or
really?
Or he might go into acting or something. Yeah, but it's clearly a work. Because, they just wanted the joke of, they turn the lights out on this jobber. But it's actually reminded me of an old angle from the 90s with Brian Pillman, where he was working on his Loose Cannon character, which dealt a lot. It ended up influencing Stone Cold, and then it's a big component of the Dean Ambrose, your current WWE champion character, where basically, I don't know if you know this one, but Pillman and Eric Bischoff, he was working at WCW, he convinced Bischoff to fire him and do it for real, so it was just like we're saying, so it's a shoot. Fire him for real for being a crazy guy, and then he would go to, ECW and, raise hell, and then he'd come back and have all this, buzz on
Intel?
Him because he was just... No, he would have buzz about it. He would just be, he was the crazy guy who just wants ECW, and he got fired, and they'd bring him back, and they could build that into storyline. And Bischoff, but he was like, to make the boys in the back, all the wrestlers believe it, you got to do it for real, you got to really fire me. So Bischoff's like, that's brilliant, I'll fire you. So he fires him, goes to ECW for a while, and then he goes to WWF and gets a much bigger contract than WCW was going to give him, because he totally worked Bischoff into getting him out of his contract. Brian Pillman was too good for this world, and he died in 1997. The man who was running ECW at that time would have been Paul Heyman. He might not be back in the WWE. His contract expired, and apparently he had no downside guarantee. He was getting paid per appearance, and when Brock doesn't show up that often, that means not much money for Paulie. I know that would be a big loss for you if Paul Heyman is not on the product.
He's one of the main reasons I watch the show. That being said, I don't think they're going to get rid of him because Brock is still on the cover of the video game and Paul is in the intro video.
Right.
So there's a reason to keep him around, and if anything, they could just trot him out like Brock and not make it a weekly thing on Raw. So it makes sense to me why he's not drafted. It's not as crazy. It's not good. I would like to see him every week, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. Last little tidbit of some more news coming out. We had talked mostly about Brock Lesnar's drug test, but Roman Reigns, whose suspension just ended, he'll be back in time for Battleground on Sunday. Apparently, for the new rumor is that it was for Adderall, but they don't name
the
substance. Yeah, it's just, you know, they don't name the substance, so they let these rumors kind of fester. They think it's just better for PR just to not make it a blanket that they don't say. I mean, to be honest, USADA, USADA, that does the testing for UFC doesn't name the substance either.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's the Nevada commission that does. So it's that crazy thing where it's like, well, this is all speculation that you have in UFC and WWE of what these guys are actually doing. Either way, he'll be back at Battleground on Sunday, and as we talked about last time, I'll be there. You know, pretty great card. You got your Shield triple threat, Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins.
Ambrose wins that, clearly. SmackDown,
sure?
Needs the belt. SmackDown needs the belt.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing I saw is that implemented in previous draft era was, you know, the other, so maybe he does keep the belt because then they can, Stephanie can go, well, my champion's going to have a belt and just give the big gold belt to Rollins or something. So, yeah, hopefully
Gene
comes out of it.
Really hope they don't give another belt out. I think that's the consensus as well.
We'll see what happens there. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens continue their forever fight. Especially, you know, I think that, yeah, that'll be a good match. They put them both on Raw, so it's not their last fight. It wasn't going to be anyway.
I just want Owens to get a USA chant going because he's from Canada and stays from Canada. So that's my only hope.
Yeah, no, well, I'll see what I can do about that. John Cena, Enzo Amore, and Big Cass versus the Club, AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and Carl Anderson. You know, I'm just really excited for the opening promo, both intros, the Cena and the Enzo and Cass one.
It's so great. It's so fun.
Yeah. I mean, the other night when they did on Monday, they did the 18-man tag or whatever it was. It was basically just like an excuse to have all their best talkers in the ring at the same time. It was pretty phenomenal. No pun intended.
I am not complaining. Oh, so good.
Yeah. Natalia versus Becky Lynch, who are both on, will be both on SmackDown the next week, so I can see this feud going if they don't blow it off. There's some audio going around, and I'll have to wait and try to get, I can't even really make it out, especially with her bros, but Becky Lynch was at San Diego Comic-Con, asked about the Divas Revolution, and she was also shooting, saying, you know, I wish they would do something where the storyline wasn't just that we're all catty and we hate each other.
Ooh, somebody's in trouble.
Audio that comes out. You know, somebody has to say it, so maybe she's the new face of the Diva, the women on SmackDown, so maybe she's safe. The Miz versus Darren Young for the IC belt. It'd be really strange for Darren Young to have
belt. Darren Young's not going to win, but here's my hope, is that Darren, like, pay-per-view right before the election, he wins.
Yeah, I'm curious if they actually pay off anything with the make Darren Young great again.
He's pretty popular right now. People are really behind him. He's, like, one of the most easy-to-like wrestlers. The story is very interesting. He has no baggage. Sure, Bob Backlund has baggage. In fact, if Backlund gets fired for all these crazy things he says, That's actually good for Darren Young.
Yeah, no, I actually am curious, the Backlund thing. That's why I would like, I'm glad he has a more prominent position. He will on SmackDown, or actually he's on Raw. But to kind of see what kind of crazy shit Backlund will say.
Yeah.
The other half of that coin is the Rusev versus Zack Ryder for the U.S. Championship, another mid-card thing. Another guy who's, you know, fun enough to cheer for in Zack Ryder, but I get it. Got to go with Rusev.
I want Rusev forever.
I'm excited to see him. Yeah, well, you know, we'll probably have more of that. I'm wondering if the Total Divas wedding episode will happen while we're doing this podcast. I really hope it will. So next on the card, we've got the New Day versus the Wyatt family. I'm just really excited to see the New Day live. I don't care either way with the match, but I'm really excited for that. They're actually going to sell, breaking news, they will be selling Bootio's cereal.
Oh, like, yay!
Yes, for like $13 a box. The last match here on my card is Charlotte and Dana Brooke versus Sasha Banks and TBD.
And your guess is?
I got to break it out percentage-wise. I'm pretty much at like 1% Bailey at this point, though.
Okay, so...
I think it's 60% Naomi, because she did get drafted. She is coming back from injury. 20% Summer Rae.
Nikki?
WWE just,
what about Nikki?
20% Nikki. Nikki just had an MRI and then took a picture at the Performance Center. I don't know if she's going to come back that soon. Even though she'd be pretty limited in a tag match, they could kind of protect her, but I don't think she's got a neck injury. They're not going to put her out there unless she's fully cleared. I think the dark horse is Summer Rae, because WWE just put up a video from like 2014 from Sasha's first kind of storyline in NXT when she was BFFs. Literally, that was her tag team with Summer Rae. Either way, those 99% of things, I know that didn't add up to 100, but the 99% that isn't Bailey will probably be booed. Nikki, maybe not, but I think there might be some smarty people.
No, I think you're right. Here's my guess is it's going to be Nia Jax, because it makes sense in terms of having Charlotte has muscle, and then there's muscle on the other side. It makes more sense. And she's already drafted.
Yeah. And a quick note on the Nia Jax thing. When you get a chance, and if any listeners who have the network have a chance, Nia Jax versus Bayley was really good. Their best match so far, the best match that Nia's had. She did a jackhammer, which was Goldberg's finishing move, and people are hoping they call it a jackhammer. So, not everything is bad in the WWE universe, and, you know, despite the, you know, what the internet might say, I don't think everything's bad in the political universe. I think we just saw a 4-day show, and in a few days we'll see another 4-day show.
Yeah.
Are you ready to leave Cleveland?
No, I really, really liked it here, and the convention was really well run on the outside. I mean, I can't speak for the stage, but I could definitely speak for security and just the protesters and the cops and the delegates. Everyone was cool, so that was unexpected in a really nice way. And it's really cheap here, so if you're anywhere near Cleveland, you should visit, because they have really, really bad for you food that's delicious and really cheap good beer. And any week but the convention, it's incredibly cheap to stay in a hotel in a very nice neighborhood.
Well, that's good to hear. Hope Philly treats you as well.
I have a feeling it will not.
And why is that?
Because it's Philadelphia, and a woman tried to fight me at a Phillies game, and I didn't say anything. So, yeah, let's end with a little bit of me with Cleveland's finest Dolph Ziggler, and enjoy Battleground, everybody.
How much is Vince like Trump and vice versa? You've been
well, at the end,
with both.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they're both showmen, and Vince has created the greatest show on earth. Trump has been on our show a few times. Even complimented me on my match one time, which is pretty funny. But obviously, the smoke and mirrors on the entrance, all of the action and excitement and entertainment that goes with it is something that everyone's looking for in a new candidate, I think.
What's weirder, this or Mania? This or SummerSlam? This is really weird.
As I've been walking around, it's very much like I feel like a fan at WrestleMania going, oh, can I, John Bolton, can I get a picture with you?
Here's the difference. At WrestleMania, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how anyone votes.
And you might lose a lot of your people, regardless of what side they're on, because they think you're supporting one or the other over the next 2 weeks.
That's very true, and that's why it's important for me to try and get to the DNC. Just to, I don't pick a side. I'm an outside observer. I love politics. I graduated with a political science degree. I've been into this the whole way, and now it's an exciting election. Whether you hate the opponent, candidates, or you love them, it's exciting, and people are talking about it. So I'm happy to be here representing WWE and just enjoying Cleveland.